glory, His divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Size Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. Sai Ram and good morning dear listeners, welcome to Thursday Live. You're tuned to our Asia stream and we are coming to you from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and it's my divine privilege to be hosting this segment called Morning Glory. Thank you for your company on this very pleasant Thursday morning, the last day of May, the 31st of May, that is, 2018. Yes, you heard it right. Prashanthi Nilayam is quite pleasant now, as the temperatures have dropped just a few notches lately, and the sizz and the hiss of the summer sizzle has quietened, thankfully. Current weather conditions call for a mix of sun and cloud, with the chance of some thunder and rain activity starting tomorrow, and thankfully, it is expected to last for a few days thereafter, even if intermittently. Temperatures, minimum 25 degrees Celsius and a maximum of 37 degrees. The breeze is very pleasant, especially in the mornings and after sunset. Here's what's trending here in Prashanthi Nilayam right now. It almost seems like Bhagwan flicks some mysterious switch at this time of the year. As the weather rapidly starts to improve, Baba's beloved students start making a beeline back to the Divine Valley after their summer vacations. And as always, they return in thousands. Along with them are their parents and chaperones. This place is humming with joy and excitement of the new school year. The back-to-school buzz is especially prominent in the Mandir. Starting this weekend, we are so looking forward to the Vedam and the Bhajan in the Mandir, as they will be charged by the little voices of the primary school children as well as the deep and full-throated recitation by the university students. As Bhagwan always maintained, his students are his only property. Let's dedicate today's episode of Morning Glory to his students, his darling daughters, the golden girls of the God incarnate, the Purna Avatar, the Param Brahmam, his divine worship, Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. We begin once again by offering our wholehearted devotion, love and salutations at His lotus feet. As you know, the alumni of the first campus of Baba's University, the Anandpur College, is turning 50 this July. The Golden Jubilee celebrations of the women's alumni take place in Prashanthi Nilayam on 21st of July in the Divine Presence. A large number of his golden girls have registered to participate and they are coming from all over Bharat and the world to offer their homage and gratitude to their divine founder chancellor. Today, we will hear 9 golden voices of his daughters, followed by a brand new episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Under the spotlight is Ms. Anu Venkateswaran, another Sai daughter from the United States of America. Have a listen, please, and do remember to share your feedback, as always, by email at listener@radiosai.org.
Sai Ram, my humble pranams at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. I am Sai Kripa Chandrasekharan from Toronto, Canada. I completed my BCom honors in the batch of 2003 to 2006. I feel privileged to be part of the Golden Jubilee celebrations at the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning Anantapur campus, as it is a one-of-a-lifetime opportunity to meet all 50 batches of golden girls who have experienced Swami's divine grace and blessings. I also see this as a blessing to be able to get soaked in His divine love yet again and relive those precious memories. I hope to be there at Parthi for the celebrations on the July 21st and 22nd. Sai Ram.
My humble pranams to Swami and Sai Ram to all. I am Lakshmi Narayanan, currently residing in Chennai. I completed my BSc Biology course at Ananthapur as Lakshmi Venkateshan. With the blessings of Swami and the guidance of our world-class faculty, the 1977-82 batch. This place has enlightened my knowledge, elevated my spirituality, and shaped me into the person I am today. For this, I am extremely grateful to Swami, who has stood by me and all our students at all times. Swami's teachings guides us every day and takes us through the path of kindness and light. I look forward to celebrating the joyous occasion of the Golden Jubilee of this divine institution with gratitude, love and devotion. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, my pranams to Swami. My name is Vijayalakshmi Suresh, currently residing in Toronto, Canada. I completed BCom Honours during 95-98 batch. The excitement in the air is truly overwhelming. Just can't contain myself. I would like to dedicate the following to Swami. Dear Swami, I did not know who I was until you revealed my identity as your child. I did not know what to study until you bestowed the highest wisdom. I did not know what to do with my life until you chose me as your instrument. End of my life, I finally hope to learn what you truly want me to know. I pray to Swami that I should be able to participate and immerse myself in this great grand celebration of our lifetime on July 22nd, 2018. Jai Sai Ram.
Om Sri Sai Ram. Na peru Suryakanta. నేను హైదరాబాదులో ఉంటున్నాను. 1971లో అనంతపురం శ్రీ సత్యసాయి మహిళా కళాశాలలో ఇంటర్మీడియట్లో చేరాను. 1973-76లో బీఎస్సీ, 76-78లో ఎంఏ తెలుగు చదివి తరువాత హేమలతా మేడం పర్యవేక్షణలో పీహెచ్డీ చేశాను. జీవిత మార్గాన్ని చూపించి జీవించడం నేర్పించిన భగవాన్ బాబాగారి కాలేజీలో చదవడం పూర్వజన్మ సుకృతం, స్వామి నాకు ప్రసాదించిన గొప్ప వరం. అక్కడ చదివిన 10 సంవత్సరాలు నా జీవితంలో స్వర్ణయుగం. అప్పటి నుండి ప్రశాంతి నిలయమే నా పుట్టిల్లయింది. స్వామి ప్రేమతో తల్లివలే లాలించి మాకు నేర్పిన జీవన విధానం మాకు భవిష్యత్తులో ప్రశాంతమైన జీవితం గడపడానికి హేతువయ్యింది. అటువంటి పుట్టింటికి రావడానికి ఏ అవకాశం దొరుకుతుందా అని నిరీక్షిస్తూ ఉంటాను. జూలై 21-22 తేదీలలో మా కాలేజీ గోల్డెన్ జూబ్లీ సెలబ్రేషన్స్ ప్రశాంతి నిలయంలో జరుగుతాయని తెలిసినప్పటి నుండి ఆ రోజు కోసం ఆతృతతో ఎదురుచూస్తున్నాను. మళ్లీ సహచరులతో కలిసి పొందిన ఆనందాన్ని, నేర్చుకున్న విషయాలను పంచుకుని స్వామికి కృతజ్ఞతలు చెప్పుకుని ఆయన ఆశీస్సులు పొందాలని తహతహలాడుతున్నాను. జై సాయిరాం.
Sai Ram, I am Swami's student Asha Malhotra, staying in Delhi. I have had the privilege of studying in Anandpur from 1980-85 under the umbrella of abundant love and care of our beloved Swami. Here I pursued my intermediate and graduation. I feel very lucky to be part of Golden Jubilee celebration of our college on 21st and 22nd July 2018. I feel that I have never left Parthi. Swami's guidance has enlightened our lives and shown us the correct path to tread on. With immense love in my heart for my Saima, I am looking forward to once again relive my precious moments with my fellow alumni. Sai Ram.
My loving Sai Ram to you all on this blessed day. I am Bhuvaneshwari Rajshekar from Navi Mumbai. I had the golden opportunity to have graduated with the BSc and BA degree in the year 1992-93 respectively. I would like to share with you all about the upcoming Golden Jubilee in the form of an acronym. Golden Jubilee. Golden G, God's own university, that is O, open to all from KG to PG, where L, learning is taught for life and not for living, with D, 3 Ds, duty, devotion and discipline. The E, educate as envisioned by our loving chancellor, that N, nurtures all its students as his properties. Jubilee, with joy and jubilation for the upcoming Golden Jubilee celebration. Sai, I offer my love and gratitude at thy lotus feet. Swami, guide me so that I am able to unceasingly work for thy mission of love and seva to build a Sai age wherein I am able to move from I to V and be able to L, love all and serve all. Thus, take forward thy vision as an E ever giving and an E ever growing mission of the Kali age. I hope to be there at Parthi for the Anantapur Golden Jubilee to be celebrated on the 21st and 22nd July 2018. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, I am P. Sugunakala of Jagithyal District, Telangana State. I have completed my inter and degree in the year 1993. The days I have spent at Anantapur are golden days in my life. They give strength throughout my life and show me the right path. Now, it's a great privilege to me to attend for the Anantapur Golden Jubilee celebrations, where Swami had given first preference for women. I will be attending Golden Jubilee celebrations on 21st and 22nd of July at Puttaparthi. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, I am Dharanicha Satyanarayanan, currently residing in Toronto, Canada. I did my Bachelor's of Arts, majoring in Philosophy, at the Anantapur campus as Dharanicha Raghunathan during the years 1993 to 1996. The Golden Jubilee celebrations at Parthi is a priceless gift Bhagavan is giving to us to relive the golden years we spent at His lotus feet, to share our experiences and learn from our fellow sisters. I gratefully and excitedly wait to participate in the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity of the Golden Jubilee celebrations that will be held on July 21st and 22nd, 2018 at Prashanthi Nilayam, Puttaparthi. Jai Sai Ram.
Om Shri Sai Ram, dear listeners. Today, on the 6th day of March 2018, I have Anuradha Venkateswaran, better known as Anu, of the United States of America, to record this episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Anu's family has been associated with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba for over 50 years. She studied at the Anantapur campus of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning from 1992 to 1995 and graduated with a bachelor's degree in science, particularly in physics. After her marriage, she moved to the United States in 1998, where Anu continues to be actively involved in the Satya Sai organization. Bhagwan has given her numerous opportunities to speak about His glory at various Sai centers and regions across the United States. Among the many hats that Anu wears is that of a mother of 2 teenage children. She also works for a leading telecommunications company as a system analyst. She is an SSC teacher, a strong advocate of the Sai Youth Adult Program, and an active member of the Sai Alumni in the United States and the Satya Sai Center of Atlanta. On that note, Sai Ram Anu, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories on Radio Sai.
Sai Ram Karuna Didi, thank you so much for having me here today. I offer my salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet. I'm truly honored to be here. I'm still in disbelief that I'm sitting here in front of you today to record this session. Thank you. Well, we're delighted
to have you. You have quite a family history of being associated with the Lord of Prashanthi Nilayam 5 decades. Would you like to begin by sharing with our listeners a few of the experiences of your family elders?
Most certainly. They're very humble beginnings. My maternal grandparents are very pious, orthodox Tamil Brahmins. They hail from Chennai. So it was in the year 1963 that my mother first had Swami's darshan in Perambur, Chennai. And a friend of hers, a colleague from work, told her about Swami. And she just went after work on a Saturday afternoon. She saw Swami and she was smitten. What can I say? So she came back home late that evening. And given that it's a very traditional family, and she was home after dusk, my grandparents panicked. And they were like, why did you, you know, step away without telling us? It was the day before telephones. So my mother cried and they felt very bad. Everybody was very fond of my mom and the family. They said, okay. Then they found out the details. They said, tomorrow we'll all come with you and we'll go and see Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. It was a big step for my grandfather. You know, he's a very orthodox Brahmin. He does Shaligramam Puja. And those were the days when not many flattering articles about Bhagwan were coming in the media. So it was a big step for them. And the next day, the entire family went and saw Swami. And they too were conquered. It took my grandfather a little bit more time than others. Because he was a staunch follower of Kanchi Paramacharya. Mm-hmm. So it took him a while. And over time, you know, miracles started occurring in the home. And when Vibhuti appeared from Shankaracharya's picture, then my grandfather said, oh, Swami, I'm not testing you. Please forgive me. And several other miracles.
That would be the senior Shankaracharya.
Yes, yes.
Jayendra Saraswati.
Yes, yes, yes. We call him Mahaperyava. Uh-huh. So, like that, Swami made that personal connection with every member in the family. My grandmother, very simple, very pious, very simple woman. One day she was having a conversation in the puja room and kumkum was falling from Raja Rajeshwari Amman's picture. And she made a remark and she said, look at the color of this kumkum. It's like rangoli powder. You know, the kumkum that we give to Sumangali married women, it should be this brown mixed with haldi. It should be that color of the maroon color. And she didn't even finish making that statement. The color of the kumkum changed and it started falling in a different color. So these are stories I've heard growing up as a child. I've heard these stories. And my mom, her younger sister, and my grandfather got to attend the very first international conference in Avatsbury in the year 1967. In fact, my aunt, my younger aunt, when I messaged her this morning saying I'm headed to Radio Sai for an interview, she went through the archives and she sent me pictures, black and white pictures of Swami with his nice bushy hair, with a sea of people around him at the first world conference. So those are some stories that I've heard growing up.
Wow. And what were your own early memories of Bhagwan?
So my mother got married in the year 1968 and my father was not a believer in Swami. And so for several years, my mother could not come to see Swami or even see Swami when he visited Sundaram in Chennai. Soon my brother and I came along and my father had a traveling job. He was working for a bank. So my mother enrolled my brother and I in Balvikas lessons and slowly my father came around. It didn't happen overnight. We participated in cultural programs, shloka chanting, learning bhajans when Swami visited Chennai, Sundaram, and also we were brought to Prashanti Nilayam also for some cultural programs. So for me it was gradual. Swami was one of the pictures in the altar, but one memory, a very vivid memory I have as a child, is seeing Swami come out for darshan. And I thought, I go to temples, we go in pradakshinas around the altar and we offer clothes, we offer sweets. Here is this God in flesh and blood who's walking amongst us. He's taking pradakshina of the people. He's going around the people and he's asking, what can I do for you? He's healing people. He's coming to you for help. I said, this is a very different God. This one is a keeper. That is a feeling I had as a child. And I remember Swami would just glide in. He wouldn't walk. I would be curious to see his feet. And it was almost impossible. It was like he was just swimming. He was just floating in. So those are some amazing memories I had as a child.
And how did that connection translate into your becoming a Satya Sai student?
Yes, that is a story in itself. In the year 1989, I joined the Sevadal group from Chennai. The month of May, I don't know if it's still the case, in the month of May, Sevadals from Tamil Nadu come here for different service in the canteen, security duty in the West
Block. You would have been a teenager, just finished your three levels of Balvikas.
Yes, actually, I had just finished, I think, ninth grade, around that time. It was around that time, ninth, tenth. So when I came as part of the youth group to participate in the seva, I met a lot of students who had come to give their entrance exam at that time. So I got curious. I'm like, why are they dressed? They're dressed very differently. They talk differently. And I met some of them, and they shared how, you know, being a student, you have so much proximity, to, physical proximity to Bhagwan. And I heard some of their stories, and the desire rose in me, like many other students. So I wrote a letter to Swami. And as was the tradition then, after Sevadal duty, the Sevadals are taken to Swami for Padnamaskar and blessings. Since Swami was in Whitefield at that time, they arranged several buses and we were taken to Whitefield. So I had written a letter to Swami saying, Swami, I'd like to become your student. Please accept me. And I was all excited. I was sitting in the very first row. We were seated right in front of the Kalyana Mandap. This was before Sai Ramesh Hall came up. So when Swami comes out from Thrai, he'd see us sitting in the group. Swami saw us. Before Swami came out, I was sitting in the first group, and the lead auntie said, child, you're not real Sevadal, you're only a youth member. Go sit in the back. So I thought they'll move me maybe two or three rows back, but nobody wanted to give up their seat. Of course, it's to have the darshan of the Lord. So I had to get up and go all the way back. So I was naturally disappointed. I was sitting right in front of the Kalyana Mandap door. So Swami came for darshan, made his rounds. He decided to go to the boys' hostel. And then he entered the Kalyana Mandap unbeknownst to us. We had no idea. All of a sudden, there's a lot of hush-hush. And then Swami comes out from the Kalyan Mandap. So I'm first in line. Swami comes out and he says, I'll give you all Padnamaskar. So for a good 3 or 4 minutes, he's standing there. I'm right at his feet while everybody's getting arranged to have, you know, getting settled to have his darshan. And he took my letter and I said, Swami, I'd like to become your student. He just blessed me and took the letter. So after that, I applied for intermediate because it was in the year 1990. I joined in 1992 for my undergrad program, but in 1990 I applied for inter and got in. I was very homesick. The first 1 week, my mother says, I wrote about 20 letters, and she remembers seeing the letters blotched with tears. I said, come, I would tell them, make up this story, come get me, tell, this is the reason Papa's not well. I gave them all these excuses, and Mom and Dad came after a week, and Hemlata Madam was the principal at that time. She wasn't too thrilled. But I did end up going back home. The next 2 years, I would say, there was a lot of self-introspection. And I thought about what Madam said, that, you know, I deprived another student of the opportunity. So it was a lot of soul-searching, I would say. And I decided, I'm going to try one more time, apply for the undergrad program, and if it's Swami's will, I'll get in. So in 1992, I applied. I didn't apply in any other college.
Didn't they ask you that are you going to have homesickness again?
Actually, I never declared that. They didn't ask. So it was a don't ask, don't tell. I'm not proud of it.
They didn't recognize you?
No, they did not. I was only there for a week, so they didn't recognize
me. Lucky you.
Yes. Yes, I would have been in trouble. But after I went in to college, after a few weeks, some people could place me. But it was too late then, I suppose. So I did get back in, and history repeated itself. Deja vu. This time my father said, I want nothing to do with this. You and your mother on your own. Thankfully for me, my mother is my rock. You know, she supports me. In Telugu, we say pichi for Swami. She had just as much pichi for Swami in her younger days. So she said, I'll back you. So she brought me and enrolled me for the summer course. Everything was nice and fine and dandy when Swami was giving darshans. Then I was like, oh, I have to be in this room with all these girls. My mother remembers me standing in front of those mesh windows. And she said, it looked like you were standing in a prison and crying. That's the picture she paints. But it was just homesickness. I had never been away from home. I wanted Swami, but I also wanted Mom. So this time what she said, I'll take you back under the condition that I'll get you married right away. So I was all of 16, 17 years. You can imagine my reaction. I said, no, Mom, that can't happen. So then she told me, this is an advice that I carry to date. She said, I'm your mother, I love you, but I can respond to you only when I can hear you. But Swami is the Divine Mother. He has the love of 1,000 mothers. Call him wherever you are and he'll respond. And she gave me Swami says, Ninta Venta, he's with you, beside you, behind you, everywhere. Call on him. That pacified me for a few minutes and then I started crying again. That afternoon, Swami sent word and he said, I'm going to distribute saris, as was the tradition then. This was in 1992. But Swami said, I'm very busy this year. There are many dignitaries that are visiting. So I can't do the typical way where you sit facing one another and Swami walks and distributes the saris. He said, I'll stand in the trilons, you come in your respective groups, I'll hand you the sari, you take the sari and go your merry way. So I got in the lines, and here I was homesick. I knew we were getting ready to leave to Anantapur in a couple of days. I decided to trick Swami, the Chitta Chora. So you have to remember, I was very naive. I still probably am, but I was very naive at that time. So I thought when Swami handed me the sari, I would collect it and accidentally, for everybody else, accidentally but purposely for me, drop it by his feet and just touch his feet and take the sari. That way I get a namaskar and the sari. It was a foolproof plan because the idea came to me just moments before it was my turn. But when Swami handed me the sari, he was just not letting go. He held on to it for dear life and I was holding from the other side, and it lasted a few seconds. I was very embarrassed because I knew he had read my thoughts. And then he gave me a gacha look that only Swami and I really understood what was going on. And I still remember when I went away, the other girls were saying, oh, you're so lucky. Swami spent so much time looking at you. And I was like, if only you knew what happened. But that was a very precious memory. It is a very precious memory that I carry to date. It may seem like I lost the opportunity for Pad Namaskar, but he reminded me of what my mother said earlier that day, that he's Antaryami and he can hear every thought. I just have to call and he'll respond. So these
very,
are some.
Very beautiful. So during your tenure as his student, you must have had some experiences, both internal and external, of his Swami, of his omniscience, omnipresence.
Yes, several. This was the one I just narrated. Mm-hmm. Was the very first experience of his omniscience, that he knew he could read my thoughts. And after summer course, we went back to Anantapur. The first visit back to Parthi was during Guru Purnima in the month of July. And my birthday falls in the month of July. So as is a tradition, those whose birthdays come at that time are allowed to sit in the front. So I was seated in the first row with a tray of items to get blessed by Swami. And when Swami came for darshan, he came up to me and he asked in Tamil, Appa Amma Vandirkala, good morning Sol. It means, loosely translated, have your parents come, say good morning to them. And he used the same slang that we use in my home, in a Tamil Ayer home, Vandirkala, we don't say Vandirkangala. He used the exact same slang. I was like, is he talking to somebody else? Because I had no idea that my parents were going to make a trip or any of that. So I didn't answer, I just looked at Swami, he blessed me. And as I stepped outside the Mandir gate, I saw both my parents standing there with their luggage. So they had decided to surprise me because it was my birthday. It was around the time of my birthday and they knew I was homesick. So they decided to surprise me with some sweets and some gifts. So that was another sign of his omniscience. He knew, even before I did, that my parents were coming there to see me. Several other experiences, Didi. I remember the Spirit of Unity concerts was held, I believe it was in the year 92, also around Swami's birthday time, or it may have been a year or two after that.
I think 95.
95?
Yeah.
Okay, so the year I graduated. Around that time, M.S. Amma, M.S. Subbalakshmi Amma, had come there for a concert. And the day after the concert, I happened to be in one of the first few rows. Swami came to her, materialized Vibhuti, and he was coming towards the Anantapur block. Earlier that day, Jema Madam, our warden, came into the dormitory and said, you know, Swami is very busy now with so many guests arriving. Stop stretching your hands out with letters and hankies and looking for blessings. Just take it easy for a few days. So it was a habit. I had this habit of always carrying a letter for Swami. It would just be a letter saying, thank you, Swami, for everything, my beloved Saima, thank you for everything. And I always had a habit of carrying a handkerchief for Swami. You never know when he'll need one. And I had no intention of giving it to Swami because she had specifically said not to. So Swami materialized Vibhuti for MS Amma, and he walked towards the Anantapur block and he stood right in front of me. So I was a little hesitant, should I offer the handkerchief or not? Swami looked at me and he nodded as if to say, give me the handkerchief. I gave him the handkerchief. He cleaned his hand and he threw it back at me. And then he pointed to the book that I had and he said, give it to me. He said in Telugu, give it to me. For a moment, I didn't realize what he was asking for. And then it struck me that he was asking for the letter. So actually, I was shaking. I didn't expect this at all. And in my mind, I'm going, we were told not to give the letter. But you know, Swami knew, Swami's word vetoes everything. So I took the letter and I gave it to Swami. And he took the letter and he went away. He just went across the rest of the block and he went away. Again, another sign of his omniscience. He knew I had that letter. He knew I had that handkerchief. After I graduated from the portals of the institute, I did security duty for a couple of years before I got married and left the U.S. During one of those visits, before I got on the bus from Chennai, my father had met with the numerologist, and he had told him that certain numbers were not lucky for the family members. Like, for instance, his name is Narayana Swami. He said, you try to find a name in five letters. So he changed his name to S.N. Swami. And my brother's name is Ishwar. He said it ends with W-A-R, war. Change it, it's not good. Change it to Ishwaran or something. So they were working on that. And for me, he had said 8 is not a lucky number. The letters in my name add up to 8, Anuradha. He said 9 is a good number for her. Maybe add an extra A or an extra O somewhere. So when my father mentioned this to me, I said, no, Appa, whatever I have is fine. You know, I'm sure Swami's grace is there. I pretty much brushed it off. I didn't give it too much thought. So I came for darshan. I was doing security duty. And when Swami came one of those days, he looked at the lady sitting next to me and he said in Telugu, Evaru chepparu 8 lucky number ledani, 8 lucky number. In fact, emphatically he stated.
Can you translate, please?
Who said 8 is not a lucky number? 8 is a lucky number. He said that emphatically. But he wasn't looking at me. He looked at this lady. Maybe as a passing, he might have looked at me, but it wasn't really, you know, an extended look. And he passed. So it took me a while that that message was meant for me, because the lady asked me, she did not understand Telugu. She was a Tamil-speaking lady. She asked me to translate. And as I was explaining it to her, I realized it was a message for me too. As Swami says, you know, if you have Sai Anugraha, the Navagrahas cannot do anything to you. So that was my decision was made. I told Dad, I'm sticking with Anuradha, the way it's spelled. Mm-hmm. Another sign of his omniscience. During one of my security duty days in Vrindavan, my mother and I had a conversation before darshan. And during the course of the conversation, she said, this person has came. Being the smart aleck I was, I said, Amma, that's wrong. Grammatically, it's wrong. You have to say this person has come. You don't say has came. She said, oh, but anyway, you understood what I was trying to say. End of conversation. I go for darshan. Swami was headed out somewhere in the car. It was during one of those Akhanda Bhajan days where, you know, we are given duty, we have to sit there. Swami was headed out somewhere to the Gokulam or somewhere. And as he was passing by that block, he stopped. I could see him through the mirror. He stopped the driver. And those were the days that Swami would quickly walk up. He walked up to me and he said, husband has came. Wow. Those are the exact words.
Same and grammar.
Yes. Husband has came, he asked. I wasn't prepared for that. And here, mom is sitting not too far from me. She's like, hey, Swami's talking to Anu. And then he just said
that. In her own English, she didn't know.
She had no idea. She had no idea what Swami had said. That's all he said. He wasn't trying to give him. I mean, it's understood what he was trying to say. Don't try to correct your mom. She knows best. But he said, husband has came. And actually, a group of Sevadals were sitting from Orissa or some other group. So he just came to give them Pad Namaskar. And he just happened to come there and then he left. Another day like this, it was around Swami's 75th birthday. I want to say it's the year 2000. I was visiting here from the U.S. at the time, also doing security duty. I was going to start duty the following day, and that day Swami had decided he was going to distribute sari. He was in a very generous mood. I was sitting in the old students' block. And that afternoon, as my mother and I were passing by the, I think ice cream used to be served in that area then, by the ladies' side, you know, Mandir's side. We were having ice cream and we were walking there, and my mother commented, a lady was passing by wearing a brown sari. And my mother said, you know, this is a beautiful color, Anu. You should wear a brown checkered sari. She said, kapi kota color. It'll be the coffee beans, that color. It'll suit you. You know how mothers are. They always want to see their daughters get dressed. To this day, I'm 42 and she's still buying clothes for me. Anybody gives her a sari, she sets it aside for me. And when she said that, I said, I just told her, you know, my mom and I are like thick as thieves. We are good buddies. So I told her, Amma, I'm 20. What color is coffee brown, you know? So why don't you suggest something like green and pink? You know, that's a nice color for a young girl my age. She said, that too, but I really want to see you in a coffee brown sari. Check. I brushed it off again. I'm sure you can guess where this is going. Swami came out for darshan in the evening, and the boys were carrying a pile of saris. You know, typically when you distribute sari to the girls, it's the uniform sari. It's the same kind of sari. But that year, it was just different. There were silk saris, there were cotton saris, Mysore silk, all kinds of saris. So the boys were carrying different piles and he was just distributing. When he came to the old student block, I was in the first, second, third row, maybe second or third row. He was distributing saris to everybody. He picked a green and pink sari, the same color that I wanted. He picked the sari, he looked at me, and then he looked at the sari and he leaned forward. He really tried hard to ignore me and went to the girl who was sitting behind me and gave her that sari. Then he looked at me again and he went through the pile. You know, Swami was just pulling from the very top, but he went through the pile, found a brown checkered sari, pulled it out from the pile and he gave it to me. So there were so many experiences like this where he proved to me that I listen to every conversation you have in my presence or not.
Mom's always right.
Mom's always right, yes. And I'm still learning. I'm still learning. Still haven't learned the lesson. But in the year 1995, that is the year I graduated. So that was the very first Messenger's Day, the old student alumni day. And you know how the girls bake a cake for Swami? Since I happen to be in the first row, I know I keep saying I happen to be in the first row. For me, Swami came first. Everything else was just, it's fine, education, a degree. Everything else was secondary. So I went there only for Swami. The rest of it just happened. So I would wake up early. I would be one of the first girls. By 2:30, I'd shower and be ready and always be ready for the first line. So I happened to be in the first line that day on Christmas Day. When Swami came, I was handed the knife to offer to Swami to cut the cake. And I did not know the protocol. So I was holding the nice decorated portion with the ribbon and I pointed the sharp end to Swami. I did not know that that's not how you offer it to Swami. You turn it around. So I offered it to Swami. Swami didn't say anything. He took it. He cut the cake. But when he returned it to me, he turned it around and he gave me the soft, the decorated side. But he drew my attention to that. It was all very subtle. I mean, he could have called me out. That's the divine, that's the beautiful Lord. He could have called me out in front of someone. There were the teachers. He could have said, is this what you're teaching the girls? But he might have lost me if he had done that. But that's the kind of connection he made with me as a student. Didi, I can go on, but I'll stop here.
During your 3 years in Anandpur, were there any difficult, challenging times apart from homesickness?
Oh, homesickness, I got over that in a couple of months. You know, all this attention from Swami, that was enough. That really made it all worth it. But after my first year, I'd completed my first year of undergrad in Anandpur. The month of April is when our summer vacations begin. I was so excited. I really had Swami Pichi. I was mad for Swami. I wrote to Mom and I said, Amma, I'm coming home on this day by this train. I'll come unload my luggage. The very next day, we're going to hop on a bus or a car and we're going to go see Swami in Kode. And being the Sai lover that my mom is, she said, yes, all for it. And she decided to join me. So I went home, left my luggage, packed another bag. And the next day we left to Kode. We took a car with some other friends. On the car ride, just before we could climb up the hill in Kode, in a place called Dindigul. So I think it's like a second tier town. It's not a big city, but yeah. We met with an accident. So the driver fell asleep on the wheel and it was a bypass curve. A bus came and hit the car. I was the only person injured. The driver wasn't hurt. It hit the front headlight and I was in the back seat behind the driver. Just moments before the accident, my mom was in that spot and I moved her. I don't know what came over me. I said, Amma, move. I need to take the corner. I want to sit there. But I'm glad it was me and not mom that took the hit. So the bus hit me and with the impact, I fell on my mom's arm. So she had a little bit of pain in her arm for a few weeks. But I ended up with a multiple fracture to my right hip, the pelvic bone. So my dreams of going to Kode were pretty much crushed at that point. You know, it's not safe with broken bones to go up the hill. So we were taken, I was taken to a private hospital there and they ran all kinds of tests that weren't even required. And even at that time, I kept telling mom, you know, I'm a Sai student. I've been in an accident. If we go now, Swami will surely call us. He'll materialize with me. I was crazy at that time. Mom said, no, I'm answerable to your dad. I mean, you're all of 20 years old. I cannot do this to you. No, everybody, all my relatives will ask me questions. No. And poor, you know, she's just a woman. The others in the bus, in the car, they just carried on. And we are in this private hospital. It's out in the boonies. It's dark and you can hear jackals or wolves howling. It was really creepy. Somehow my mother gathered her wits about her and she decided not to have any procedure done there. We took a cab and went back to Chennai. It was a long process. It took several weeks and I had to miss summer course. I was admitted in a hospital called St. Isabel's. You might know Aparna Murali.
Yeah.
Her father was the chief anesthesiologist at that hospital. He administered anesthesia for me during my surgery. Pelvic surgery was done and I don't know if I should laugh or cry about this. I remember the doctors telling me, you know, you had multiple cracks in your pelvic bone. If you put it together, if you connect the dots, it forms the letter S. I'm like, Swami, what a cruel joke. But it took several weeks for me to heal, and there I'm going, summer course is going on, and I'm missing this opportunity. I'm only going to be there for 3 years, and I'm missing the very second summer course in 1993. But Swami came in my dreams several times, several nights in a row. And I used to read the Shirdi Sai Satcharitra at that time. Tapavanam hadn't come out. There was no Radio Sai. Otherwise, that would have been such a great healer at that time. I was just reading the Shirdi Sai Satcharitra. I could quote. You could tell me chapter 50 and I tell you, you know, verbatim.
Yeah, me too. So, yes. I can relate to that.
You can relate to that.
And many members of my family.
Yes, yes.
We were daily readers for many years.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a beautiful book. So I was reading that book, and Swami came in several dreams as Shirdi Baba and as Satya Sai, mm-hmm. in the Satya Sai form too. And he told me in the dream, you will come for summer course for the last 2 days. But there I am lying in the hospital bed, and they're giving me physical therapy. They actually had these bottles that were connected to my hip, that the fluid was being drained. So there was no way I would be able to get up and leave the hospital. And I was begging the doctors. An interesting story, backstory to this. This happened in 93 of April. In October of 92, my mother had come to Parthi, and it was a turn for the Kodaikanal Sevadals to do seva, but they were short of people. So my mother, being from Tamil Nadu, and she had the scarf, she was allowed to join them to do duty. So after the 2 or 3 weeks, she sat for Pad Namaskar. Before she went for Namaskar, one of the ladies in the group, who was not doing seva at that time, she said, "You're sitting for Namaskar, can you offer my letter to Swami?" And my mother carried several letters from family members, and she had some chocolates to get blessed for an aunt of mine who was handicapped. She had all of these things. She took that letter as one among many letters. She just kept it in her pile of letters. When Swami came for darshan, she was giving Pad Namaskar. She offered the letters. Swami took all the letters. But this one envelope that was handed to Mom, he pulled it out. He looked at it. And he looked at Mom. He gave it to her and said, "Pettuko." In Telugu, "Pettuko" is keep it. Mom says he looked at her really deep, a few seconds. She didn't know what to make of it. At that time, she just thought it was a letter. It was just a drawing. It was a drawing of Swami. She took it with her, and she saw that lady after darshan, and she asked, "Is it okay? Swami gave it back to me. Is it okay if I keep it?" The lady said, "Yes, you can keep it." Mom took it back. She kept it at the altar. A couple days later, she pulled it out, and she realized it was actually an envelope. It was not just a painting. She opened it, hoping it's not a private letter. Inside, there was a painting divided in three halves. It was of a young woman in a white sari, lying in a hospital bed, and blood transfusion is being given. It may sound like a Bollywood movie, but that is how the drawing is. I can share the picture with you later, Didi. I have it there in my altar back home in Atlanta. There's this drawing of this young girl lying in a hospital bed, and it's divided into three portions. They show the Jivatma leaving, and then Swami's Abhaya Hasta. And they show that the girl becomes all right. And in the bottom, it's written, "Nandri Swami Mikka Nandri." Thank you, Swami. Thank you very much. And flowers are being offered at his feet. Of course, Mom didn't know what to make of it. She just thought, okay, maybe they went through some traumatic times and they're offering gratitude to Swami. But when my accident happened, we were able to connect the dots. So it was Swami's way of telling us, you know, it's part of your prarabdha karma. You have to face it head on. There is no way of escaping. But my grace is there. You have to go through this, but my grace is there. That's how we took it, at least. So, yeah, I've had my share of trying times. And just a few weeks before my wedding was blessed by Swami. My mother took the horoscope and my husband's picture. His was the very first match that came for me. And Swami blessed everything for the wedding. And it was purely arranged marriage. My husband and I hadn't seen each other. He was already in the U.S. Weeks before my wedding, I meet with another accident. And this time, I fall off a bike. And my dupatta gets stuck in the back wheel, so I can't even fall off. I'm being dragged on the concrete road, and I fall on my cheek. So my cheek is being just dragged in the main road. So, and you have to remember, it's a few weeks before my wedding. This takes forever to heal. I still have scars on my cheek. So that was another long, long drawn-out process. And I must say, my husband, he's really Swami's gift to me. I remember my mom had a phone conversation with him the following day, and she was so nervous. What am I going to tell him? He knows about the accident. What do I tell him? You know, a lot of people are vain these days. She's like, what do I tell him? You have scars on your face. So when she did break the news to him, he said, "Oh, it's only scars, Amma. No bones broken. We can still make the date for the wedding." That day, my mother really wanted to build a temple for my husband, I should say. He still calls her Amma. So truly lucky that Swami found me such a wonderful husband, and my in-laws too. I'm very fortunate that way. So there's always a silver lining in these lessons, and yeah, these are some of my trying times. But even during that time, before my wedding, and I was crying, I was thinking about Swami a lot when I was lying in the hospital bed. He came in my dreams. You know how it is for the weddings? We buy many saris, and I have a sari pichi. I was just yesterday, I was shopping in Malaysia all over the place. I was buying a lot of saris, and I had bought about a dozen saris for my wedding. But in one dream, Swami is materializing vibhuti for me, and I'm wearing this particular blue bini silk sari. So the day after my wedding, we went to see Swami in Whitefield. I got married in June. Swami was in Whitefield at that time in 98. So I decided to wear that sari for the very first darshan. We were going to be there for 3 darshans. I told my husband, this is the sari that came in the dream. I'm going to wear that sari. And true to the dream, Swami came up to me. He materialized vibhuti. I was in that same sari. My husband was sitting right across from me. And during my college days, so many times he asked me, has your husband come? Where is your husband? In fact, the very first time he asked me, I cried. I thought, what will my teachers think? They'll think I have somebody back home. So he knew. And when we exchanged notes later with my in-laws, they said one of those years in 1992, they were actually visiting from Singapore at the time. My husband's from Singapore. They said we were there at the time. So yeah, no word Swami says is ever in jest. And as Kasturiji says, Swami's every word is a mantra, every phrase a sutra. So no word, even if it's made in jest, it does come true.
Mm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, after you left the portals of the Satya Institute of Higher Learning, you got married, you moved to the U.S. What was that like, the adjustment or the transition phase? Because here, you know, you were living the pitchy, sai-pitchy life where you were obsessed and intoxicated with sai consciousness. Mm-hmm. And now the world has different reality, or I can say alternate reality, augmented reality. So how did you cope from the divine reality of Prashanthi Nilayam and Anantapur College to the augmented reality of the Maya world outside?
I couldn't have said it better. You put it so beautifully. It wasn't easy. And I think the reason I went through the homesickness not once, twice, was Swami preparing me for this. He knew I was going to make a life out there in the US. It's been 20 years now. And I haven't been crying the last 20 years, clearly. Mom has been visiting me and I've been visiting. But I think he prepared me by sending me to Anantapur. He slowly prepared me. And I read in an article on Radio Sai, or maybe in another magazine, where when Sri Chakravarti and his wife were posted, when Sri Chakravarti was posted in maybe Hyderabad or Anantapur, and he had to move away from this area, from this Anantapur district, his wife was very sad the night before they had to move. And the next morning at Darshan, Swami came and told her, are you sad that you're going to be moving far away? I will give you many opportunities to stay connected with me. When I read that, I just made the connection with myself. Though I was physically far away, he kept me in the Sai organization. He kept me active. I've been teaching Balvikas for 20 years now. I've been involved in Sai Bhajans and our Sai Center teaching Bhajans. So he's kept me. He's kept me in his fold. He never did let me go. There, even far, far away in the US, there are so many reminders that he's always with me. When I got married and moved, it was in Kansas City in the Midwest, which is notorious for its ice storms. You're from Canada, Didi, you can understand. So it was a Friday afternoon around lunchtime. And you know how it is in the West. On a Friday afternoon, everybody decides to take an extended 3-hour lunch. Everybody is out in the road getting a lunch. So I had stepped out of work. I pulled my car out of the garage, and I had to pick up some items for a Seva project that weekend. As I got onto the main intersection, I hit a patch of ice, black ice. And the car spun around, and I was facing oncoming traffic. Mm-hmm. It's a very busy road. There was no car in front of me, and I can't tell you, I gathered my wits about me, and I had the presence of mind. It had to have been Swami. I was not thinking of him, but just before I pulled out of my garage, I had a tape playing. It was not a CD then. It was back in probably in early 2000s. I had a tape of Swami playing in the car, and it had gone through an entire cycle. So I was thinking, should I change the tape? And I had a lot of Carnatic music tapes. Should I change the tape? And then I thought to myself, you know, even if my driving doesn't save me, having Swami singing will save me. So I decided to reinsert the tape. Then I thought, though at that moment I wasn't thinking of Swami, or I didn't shout out Sai Ram, nothing like that, but just that thought, maybe that is what saved me. So many instances like that. 3 years ago, I was attending an Upanyasam in a lecture, a spiritual discourse in Atlanta Dushan Sridhar. He's a young Upanyasakar, amazing. So I attended a session and I was driving back late in Atlanta. it was the middle of summer. It wasn't a bad weather day or anything. As I got to the intersection, a car came to a screeching halt just maybe less than a foot from me. He had beaten a red signal. I was almost hit. Just before I got to that signal, a friend of mine called, and I didn't want to answer the phone because I knew it was the conversation would have gone in a different direction. I wanted to soak in that mood of the Upanyasam, and I told Swami, "Swami, keep me in this. I just want to be thinking of you." And that happened. So there are so many instances like this, close calls. My husband hates it when I mention it in my talks, but I think there are three ways that Swami comes to our rescue, Didi. When we call him and say, "Swami, please come to my help," and he rescues us, and we know it is Swami that helped us. And we forget to call on him and he still helps us. At least for me, I fall in the third category. He's always helping and I'm blissfully unaware. I think a lot of us fall in that category. So the experience I'm about to share is one such. It had just been a few years. I had been in the US and my husband took me to a water park. I had never been to a water park here in India. So I didn't know what it entailed. My children were very young. My son was just a few months old. My daughter was 2.5. Mm-hmm. We went to this water park in Kansas City. And I was by the children's wading pool area. I was with the children. My husband went and tried some of the thrill rides. When he came back, I asked him, "How was it?" He said, "Oh, it was great. You should try it." I said, "Well, how deep is it? He's like, "About 4 feet." I figured, I did the math. I'm 5'6". I should be fine if it's 4 feet deep. And I said, "Will you watch the kids? I want to try some of those rides. I love the water, but I'm scared of it." My kids joke that I can drown in a 4 feet pool. But I said, you know, it sounded exciting. So I said, "Watch the kids and I'm going to go try some of those rides." So I went on the first thrill ride, enjoyed it. The second one, enjoyed it. The third one, you have to remember, I had no background. I hadn't been to a water park. The third one, I'm waiting in line. I'm climbing up a flight of stairs and I'm thinking to myself, "Why am I climbing up a flight of stairs?" But you know, the line is moving and you just get pushed. And before I know it, I'm sitting in a tunnel in a tube and I'm going down the tube. And then it hits me. If I'm going down a tube, I'm going to literally dive into the water. How can it be 4 feet deep? But it's too late. I jump in the water. It's 10 feet, 12 feet deep. I can't swim. I've not learned swimming. I land in there. And Didi, at that moment, I wasn't calling on Swami. I wasn't thinking of my children. I wasn't thinking of anybody. My only thought was, I don't want to die. Of course, it seemed to last eternity for me, but three lifeguards jumped in. They pulled me out. It took a while, but they were able to bring me back. But this is one of those times where I wasn't thinking of Swami, that I'm sure it was only Swami that saved me. So many stories like this, Didi. So he kept reminding me he's always with me, when far, far in the US, and even in my travels, recent travels, so many experiences.
It must be so reassuring.
Yes, it is very, very.
For sure.
He does protect us like the eyelid protects the eye.
Truly, he does. Now, the other major transition point that came in all our collective lives was when the Mahasamadhi happened. What was the impact of that transition upon you?
My last visit to Swami before, to Parthi, before the Mahasamadhi was in the year 2009. I was in Kansas City at the time. In our region, we had brought a play to perform in front of Swami. And I played a small role in writing, you know, the script and directing the children along with some others. Towards the end of the program, Swami called me up to the stage and handed the saris to me and said, "Go distribute it to those ladies who are offering aarti." I still have a picture of that moment that was captured of Swami talking to me. So after that, when I was sitting for darshan, the group left, returned to US, and I extended my stay, and I was doing security duty at that time. I had a thought. I said, "Swami, you were definitely happy with the play, but were you happy with my contribution? Can you show me a sign?" You know how in the process of preparing children, sometimes you have to be a little stern and you have to say sorry, you have to work harder, or you can't do this. And sometimes you have to come on hard. And there were some experiences like that, which were not so pleasant. So I said, "You know, Swami, you're always saying it's okay if you don't get marks, but don't get remarks. Have people been saying things like, 'Oh, Swami's student said this. Have I brought a bad name to you, Swami?' Give me a sign. If you're unhappy with me, give me a sign. If you're happy with me, give me a sign." So when Swami came for darshan, I was doing security duty. So it's not like I can ask Swami anything. I was just doing my duty. But this was a dialogue I was having internally. And Swami came for darshan. As he came close to me, it seemed like he was completely ignoring me and making an effort to not look this way at all. And I was heartbroken, just sobbing. But just when he came right in front of me, he told the brother who was wheeling him to stop. And he said, turn the chair around. And he faced me and he lifted his one arm. This was the time when Swami's other arm, he couldn't even lift it. He asked the student to help him lift it. And he raised both his arms in Abhyastha. And he said, chala santosham. He mouthed the words. I couldn't hear him. He mouthed the words. And that was my sign. I
felt very happy.
Yes, very happy. He said chala santosham. I felt very happy. And a couple days after that, we were allowed to sit in the front. We wore the saris that Swami gifted us. And I handed a letter to Swami saying thank you. So the last word Swami said to me was chala santosham. And the last words I said to Swami were thank you. So after that, 2011, Mahasamadhi happened. The day before, in the US, it was Saturday night that Swami passed. That Saturday, one of the devotees had arranged a Chandi Homam in the Hindu temple of Atlanta. And I was helping her, volunteering there. So I was very tired. I'm a night owl. I stay up late in the night. But that night, because I was very tired from all the volunteering, I went to bed early. I remember checking Radio Sai for updates. I think, was it Professor Anantaraman who was doing the daily updates? I had seen the update earlier in the morning and there was no improvement in Swami's health. I went to bed. My mother is frantically trying to reach me because she had heard the news of Mahasamadhi and she wanted to know how I'm handling it. But I was so tired, I'd fallen asleep. Even that little detail, Swami wanted me to get a good night's sleep. He knew I wouldn't be able to sleep for weeks after that. Next morning, I woke up to the news. A non-Sai friend called and said, I'm very sorry. I said, sorry about what? And when he said, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I went up to the puja room. Everybody's sleeping. I went up to the puja room. I collected everything that Swami had ever given me. The saris, the handkerchiefs. And I just sat there thinking, Swami, you have left me. Now what? I was in disbelief. It was just sadness. I felt like I had lost my mother, my father, my sibling, my best friends. I felt like I'd lost everybody in that moment. Within a few minutes, my husband woke up and he came and said, what are you doing here in the puja room? And I told him the news and he did go and research it. Then he said, yes, it is true that Swami has passed on. But he said, Anu, being the practical man that he is, he said, you know, but Anu, life goes on. The children have a Tamil class to go to. It's Sunday morning. So should I take them? They have a test today. And I said, I don't want to be home alone. I don't know what it was. I said, I don't want to be home alone. Take me to the Shirdi Baba temple, which is very close to the Tamar class. I said, drop me there on a Sunday morning. Not many people will be there. Drop me there. So we dropped the children in class, in their class, and he took me to the Shirdi Baba temple. And I was sitting right in front of Baba's Padukas. Incidentally, that's the temple that Amma and I go to every Thursday morning and attend Kakadarthi and Abhishekam every Thursday this past year. So I was sitting in front of Swami's Padukas and I'm bawling my eyes out. My phone is ringing off the hook. Not that I'm any VIP, but you know, a lot of well-wishers, they care for you. They know how much you love Swami, this pitchy, so much attachment to the physical form. And everybody's checking in on me. And poor my husband, like my secretary, he's answering the phone and he's saying, she can't talk now, I'll have her call you tomorrow. And I remember at that time, one of the phone calls that came in was from the SSC coordinator. I was scheduled to teach a group 2 class. And I told my husband to send a message saying, I'm in no shape to teach a class. Please tell him I cannot teach the class today. He had sent a text. And I'm sitting in this temple bawling. I think at some point I'd cried enough that I couldn't cry anymore. I was just empty. There was nothing in my mind. And I was sitting there. It was just silence. There was nobody in the temple. Just the previous day, Didi had gone there. I did an archana on Swami's name. How often do we go to a temple and do an archana saying Swami's Gotram Nachatram? So that priest knew that, you know, I was very sad at Swami's passing. So I'm sitting there for a few moments in silence, and if I close my eyes now, I can feel that. I could smell Swami. I could feel him by me, and I could feel the brush of his robe. And if I close my eyes, I can hear it. And Swami's saying in English, he says, why are you crying? He's talking like he's talking to a 6-year-old. And he says, why are you crying? I have not gone anywhere. I'm right here with you. I'm always with you. I could smell him. I could hear him. It was Swami. And Didi, when this happened, it was like a faucet was turned off. It's like the tears just stopped. The bucket of tears just stopped. All of a sudden, I felt like this jolt of energy. And I woke up thinking, no, you can't cry. There is more to Swami than his physical form. That's not the Swami. This 5-foot-3 frame, that is not the avatar. So I stepped out. I told my husband, you know, we have Swami's work to do. I have to teach a class today. And I picked up the phone. I called the coordinator. I said, I'm ready to teach the class. He said, are you sure? I said, yes, I'm ready to teach the class. And I wore the sari that Swami had gifted to us in 2009. Swami's memory, I went to the center. Of course, you can imagine how it is. Everybody's crying. I went to the SSC classroom. You will not believe it. I had said I wouldn't teach the class because I'm in no shape. That day I chose to talk about all the times that Swami pulled my leg. Swami made fun of me. And my class, the children, it was so light. The children said, the auntie, we came here feeling very sad, but you lifted our spirits. And everybody outside is going, what's going on in that classroom? This is no time to be laughing. But I was just sharing to them that Swami hasn't gone anywhere. He's always with us. So that little transformation he gave me with that one instant. This was my reaction on Mahasamadhi Day. I still miss his physical form. When I think about it, like I was in Thrai for One with Sai program, Thrai Brindavan, had gone there a couple of weeks ago. As soon as I set foot inside Ramesh Hall, the tears just keep flowing. You can't control because all those memories play back in front of you. As I'm walking through the Ganesh Shed, as I was crossing Kulwant Hall, the memories keep flooding back. But that is a blessing that he's given us this. How many can say they have been contemporaries of the avatar? How many can say, I have walked the same earth that the Lord has walked? So I truly feel blessed. Truly.
And I understand you continue to experience the presence even today.
Mm-hmm.
When you do a lot of work by traveling to various eye centers.
Yes.
Speaking engagements.
If somebody had told me in 1992 when I was a Sai student that I would one day speak about Swami, I would have laughed. In fact, none of my teachers, nobody would have believed that. I didn't excel in anything, Didi. I was not a singer. I was not a mandir singer. I was not giving talks at that time. I did well in school, but I wasn't excellent. I wasn't in the top 20 or anything like that. So today, that Swami's chosen me for his work like this. Again, he really doesn't need anybody to spread his message. I read somewhere that when the mandir was coming up, Swami said, everything is in this hands. If I clap my hands, everything will happen. I don't need you to do my work. If we are doing his work, he's giving us this opportunity to feel like we are contributing to the cause, but he truly doesn't need us. And it's very humbling when I travel. I connected back to the story of Krishna and Uddhava, where Krishna sends Uddhava to the Gopikas to apparently teach them jnana. But he goes there and he's humbled at their love and devotion. And he comes back saying, what are we doing here, Krishna? Let's go back to Vrindavan. That is how I feel with every speaking engagement when I travel, when I interact with the devotees. There are some that have never seen Swami, but they have so much love for him. And I think Swami has given me so much. What am I going to do in return for him? And so many experiences, Didi. And not only as an individual that I get to travel with the alumni group in North America, I've been fortunate to travel with them to several centers in the last few years. We were in Dallas last year and Flushing the year before that. A group of us went to Trinidad. So Swami's blessed us with many opportunities to come together as his daughters and reminisce about him. This happened just last year. I must share this with you and the listeners. We were getting ready for the program in Dallas. One of my seniors, Prashanti Akka, she's a few years senior to me. She lives in New Jersey. She was putting together the PowerPoint for the music program. You know how when we sing the songs, it's nice to have some slides for a visual element. So she called me one night. It was around 11 in the night. She called and said, Anu, can you take a look at the slides? I was helping coordinate the music program. Again, I am not a trained singer. I have not been to one music lesson. But somehow Swami placed me in the role of leading the effort. You know, Swami is the leader. Swami is the singer. Swami is everything. But he gives you a task, a role to play. So I was one of the co-leads for the music program. And so this Akka called and said, can you take a look at these slides and see if they're okay? So I told her, Akka, we've lost power. It's never happened in my 20 years that power has been out for over and over an hour. Typically, it comes right back. So I haven't had power, so I want to save battery in my phone. Can I check it? I don't have internet. Can I check it tomorrow? She said, yeah, that's fine. But it's strange that you haven't had power for an hour. She said, does everybody else in the neighborhood have power? I said, yeah, nobody seems to have power. She said, you know, this reminds me of something that happened back in the Anantapur days. She said, Didi, you might remember when power goes out in the night, we'd step out of our rooms and our rectangular building, everybody step out of our rooms and we'd chant the Trayambakam mantra and then we'd go back in because, you know, it was a girls' campus, we'd be scared in the night. So Didi was sharing that, this Prashanti Akka was sharing that when she was studying, one of the girls actually thought the Trayambakam prayer was an electricity prayer. When she said that to me, I chuckled. My reaction was exactly that. I chuckled. She said she actually thought that. And she went back to her hometown. And when they'd lose power, she would tell her family members and her neighbors, let's chant the Trayambakam mantram. And power would come back eventually in a few minutes. So she thought it was an electricity prayer. I just laughed it off. And she said, Anu, maybe you should chant the Trayambakam. I said, okay, Akka. So it's pitch dark. I just have my phone. I'm stressed out about the program, actually. You know, we say Swami is the doer, but you're stressed out about it anyways, right? So I'm sitting in my couch. I still remember where in my house I was sitting at the time. There, the rest of the family is fast asleep. Mom's there, my husband, children, everybody's asleep. It's 11 in the night. So I'm sitting in the couch. I just lean forward, and I'm just mouthing the words. I'm not even saying it aloud. believe me. I'm just mouthing the words. Bakam yajamahi sugandhim pushtivartanam urvarukame vabandhanan mrityormukshi amamritat. Boom! I hear a boom when I finish the chant. The power comes back on. And I get chills. I get shiver. Wow, did that really happen? I couldn't believe it for a second. I mean, was it a coincidence? Was the power meant to come back anyway? And I just happened to chant at that time. So immediately I messaged Akka on WhatsApp. I said, Akka, you won't believe what happened. Yeah, what happened, Anu? I said, I just chanted it once and I didn't even chant it out loud. I finished and the power came right back on. She said, wow, she was so thrilled. She had tears too. She said, see, Swami is proving to us he's still with us at all times. But the story doesn't end there. You know how Swami has to leave his signature? Just so you don't think, when I shared this with my children, they're like, they must have thought power was meant to come back anyway, Mom. Right? That's how we think. So next, exactly 12 hours later, around 11 in the morning, Prashanthi Akka messages me. She says, Anu, so I did some research. Do you want to guess the name of this Akka, who this other sister who thought it was an electricity prayer? I'm like, your guess is as good as mine. No, her name is Anuradha. What are the chances for Swami to have planned it that I hear this story? So I think this is how Swami leaves his signature. See, it's never in your face. It's very subtle. That's Swami for you. No, vintage Swami, I think. During another travel to Region 7 in San Francisco Bay Area, this was very recent, March of this year, they had invited me for the women's mini retreat. And I took Amma along with me there because I have a cousin there. We went and stayed at his house. So I picked up a stomach bug from the hosts. So what happened, you know how a typical stomach bug is, you're throwing up, you're purging, and you can't keep any food down. I have a talk to give at 9 in the morning, and all night I'm throwing up. I haven't had a wink of sleep. And at 7 in the morning, my mother doesn't believe in medicine. She's like, you should probably take something. She's panicking. But luckily, I had some medication that I took. I go and give the talk in the morning. I facilitate a few group discussions in the afternoon. I have some talks to give the next day at the Sai Center. The very final speaking engagement was at the San Jose, Central San Jose Sai Center. I'm just cutting the story, a long story short. Just before I get ready to go give my talk there at the Sai Center, the following day, it was after the study circle, I got to participate in the study circle too. A lady came up to me and she handed me a chilled Gatorade and a Smart Water. And she said, the Pavan gave these. So the person that I was staying with, the family that from whom I picked up the bug, his name is Pavan. So I figured, you know, Pavan knew that I'd picked up the bug and he was feeling bad. He knew the task at hand. So he must have sent some water because I needed to stay hydrated. So I finished the Gatorade. I keep the water and I go give my talk. So later that night, I message Pavan. I have that message too. I saved it just to show the children. I said, hey, thank you, Pavan, for the drinks. He said, what drinks? He asked, what drinks? I said, did you not send some drinks for me? He said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I said, is there another Pavan here? He said, there is, but that Pavan, it can't be him. And I met that Pavan later at dinner, so it wasn't him. He says that evening, he was feeling very bad, that, you know, he felt responsible that I'd picked up the bug. So he was doing meditation. And he said Swami guided him to use this particular technique where he sends his energy, where Swami sends his love to me, his healing energy to me through a particular meditation technique. And he said, I tried that and this is Swami telling me that he heard my prayers. And he's sending it to you. Wow. I still have that bottle. Whenever I go to speak, I carry that bottle with me. So it never ends. Yeah. It never ends. This is all post Mahasamadhi, these two experiences that I shared.
Well, Anu, to whom much is given, much is expected. And as a student, all of us have enjoyed such enormous amount of physical attention and grace and love from Swami. And after the departure from the physical, we all continue to enjoy it, not only personally, but it extends to our family members as well. How do you try to keep up with Swami's expectations of you as you live in the West? And, you know, or even if one lived in an urban city in India or anywhere else, where expect values are very different and pressures are enormous and definition of success and happiness keeps evolving based on what the media decides for you. So how do you maintain that balance of trying to meet Baba's expectations as we understood them to be?
I must be honest, it's not easy. Swami set the bar really high. And he says, when you said yes to me, you gave up the right to be like anyone else. That's his expectation from us. And as I mentioned earlier, he said, it's okay if you don't get marks, but don't get remarks. So it's a tall order, you know. It's you feel like you're being watched and you have to be careful. Not that you're being watched, but you feel like you owe it to Swami, you know, to behave a certain way, to conduct yourself a certain way. a senior of mine shared this story with me. I hadn't met this akka, but she said there was a girl, when she was studying in Anantapur, her parents had started looking for matches for her. And when Swami came to Anantapur, you know, in the 80s and 70s, I'm sure during your time, Swami visited the campus many times. So when Swami visited the campus, she was trying, desperately trying to get Swami's attention to seek his blessings. So she said, Swami, Swami, and Swami was ignoring her. Again, I don't know this akka, so if she hears, she should pardon me if I'm not saying the story. I'm just saying it the way it was shared with me. So she was trying to get Swami's attention. And after some time, Swami turned and looked at her and said, so you want a husband like Rama? Do you have the qualities of Sita? And this girl's name was Sita Mahalakshmi. So when I heard this, I thought, wow, that is Swami's expectation. You know, we have all these expectations from the world. You know, you should give up your seat for me. You should do this for me. But what are we doing? Do we really deserve it? That's a question we need to ask ourselves. And Swami says, I don't want your devotion. I want your transformation. So that's something that I'm always thinking. Going to the center, clocking all these hours and saying, oh, I have 100% attendance. I've never missed SSE. Is that what Swami wants? If there is no ounce of transformation in you, is that what he's looking for? One thing I tell myself, I ask myself rather, when I'm at crossroads, I ask, what would Swami want me to do? And almost always it's crystal clear. The answer is very clear. There is no, could it be this? There is no what if. It's very clear, but it's not easy. It's easier said than done. It's not easy, but I think it's important to ask that question to yourself. And sometimes, like in my case, I bounce ideas off with my husband. I'm very reactive. My husband is the calm. He's the sane one. So he says, no, don't react immediately. Take some time, think about it, sleep on it. And so he helps me. So I think it helps having somebody, a life partner, or somebody, a friend that you can go to who will remind you. In my case, sometimes I reach out to Aparna, I reach out to Sumana Murli, I reach out to somebody that I respect, somebody whose opinion I value and respect, and say, this is my situation, how should I handle it? And we all go through those situations, whether it's with SSE or bhajans or anything at the center, there's something going on. And that's the way I keep myself grounded. And many times when I'm really confused, I'll just open a Vahini or I'll go to Radio Sai and I'll find the talk with just the right message. And lately I've been hooked to Brother Prem's answering booth sessions, and they've helped me immensely prepare for my SSE classes. I have to tell him I'm literally plagiarizing some of his material for my SSE lessons. So Swami, he reminds us of his expectations. And I remember in our final year's interview, Swami told us, we said, Swami, what can we do for you? You've given us so much. He said, no, there is no Guru Dakshina, but if you really want to give me something, there is something. We're all listening with, you know, wide eyes. He says, when you have children, raise them to be good children, good citizens of the world. That is his ask. And I feel as an individual, if I can bring up my children well, and if I can be a good role model to my SSE children, the youth, some of the youth come and ask me Fridays, if I can be a good role model, I would have made some progress in that, taken baby steps towards that.
Very nicely said. My final question to you, who is Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba for you in today's context?
It will be a cliched answer, but I begin every talk the shloka twameva mata cha pita twameva. He really is my mother, father. He's my guru. He's my best friend. I can tell him anything. He's not going to judge me. So he was my best friend. He is my best friend. He's everything to me, Didi. In one word, if I had to say what Sathya Sai Baba is to me, he's everything to me. He's my life. He's my prana sakha in one word. That's how I would.
You know, you said he's somebody who won't judge you. I hear that a lot from people. What if you make choices which are absolutely in contradiction to what Baba preaches? Will he still not judge you?
I still don't think he's going to judge us, auntie, because Didi, I remember my mother telling me in one of the earlier discourses, Swami said, all kinds of people come to see me. You know, when he looks at us, he doesn't look at us as Anu in this form has beaten a traffic light here, has done this here, has done something she shouldn't do.
Got a speeding ticket?
Yeah, got a speeding ticket, yes, I have too. Has done this, has done that. He doesn't look at a person as he's a sinner, he's a saint. He doesn't look at us. When he said Divyatma Swarupalara, and he said Prema Swarupalara, that is who he saw in us. He saw in us what we are capable of becoming. So what if we've faltered? So what if we've made mistakes? And I've made a ton. I don't need somebody else to point them out to me. And, you know, we know what is right, what is wrong. Nobody needs to tell us what is right, what is wrong. But we sometimes still don't do the right thing. And we know when we falter. But the Swami is still not going to judge. To answer your question, he's not going to judge us, but he's giving us an opportunity to learn from that mistake. You make that mistake again, he's still going to forgive you. That's the loving God he is. As he told Professor Kasturi, you keep making mistakes. I think there was a time, I remember reading in Loving God on my flight to India. I was reading the book, and he had exchanged some question papers. Instead of world history, he distributed Indian history, and he was crying to Swami in the prayer hall, and somehow Swami helped him get out of the situation. And when he came to Swami, Swami said, "You keep making mistakes, Kasturi. It is my job to keep rescuing you." So he'll keep forgiving us. That's not an excuse to keep making mistakes. But he's a loving God, Didi. He's just a loving God. He's always there for us.
On that very loving note, I thank you very much, Anu Venkateswaran, for joining me on this special episode of Leading Moments, Lasting Memories.
Thank you, Didi. I am truly honored to be here. I thank Bhagwan for this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sai Ram.
నేనెప్పుడు మీ వెంటనే జంటనే ఇంటనే ఉంటూ ఉంటాను. కనుక మీరందరూ కూడా ఐకమత్యంతో పనిచేయండి. నా సీట్ ఇక్కడ కాదు, నా సీట్ మీ యొక్క హృదయమే. కనుకనే మీరు ఎక్కడ ఉంటే అక్కడ కూడా స్వామి ఉంటున్నాడు.
స్వామి ఇస్ దేర్ వేర్ ఎవర్ యు ఆర్.
ఏ కొరతలు మీకు జరగవు.
నథింగ్ విల్ హ్యాపెన్ టు యు.
ఏ విధమైనటువంటి అపజయాలు మీకు జరగవు.
యు విల్ నెవర్ హావ్ ఫెయిల్యూర్.
కానీ పరిపూర్ణమైన విశ్వాసంతో మీరు పనిలో ప్రారంభించండి.
వర్క్ విత్ టోటల్ ఫెయిత్.
ఏ పని చేసినా కూడా ఇది భగవత్ కార్యంగా భావించండి.
వాట్ ఎవర్ యు మే డు గుడ్ వర్క్ టేక్ ఇట్ యాస్ గాడ్స్ వర్క్.
Thank you. Shri